بسم الله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن اهتدى بهداه. I think this presentation is very sensitive in projecting the reality on the ground in the occupied territories. Obviously, most of us, if not all of us, have heard of the plight of the people under occupation there. There were some comments that were made in this presentation, I think, that are worth reiterating or underlining. First of all, the American public really doesn't get involved in any major or in any substantial way with having their say on what's happening in Palestine. Obviously, most of us know that this is due to the disproportionate influence that the Zionist or Jewish lobby has in this country upon the decision makers. They are concentrated in the media, the major networks, and whether it's television or radio or the press or whatever media that influences public opinion. They also have a very significant presence in the United States financial system, the banking system, and then obviously in government. So when you have these three components interlocked with each other, then you have what we have today, an American public that is basically withdrawn from exerting its influence on the decision makers here to change American policy in the Middle East. We Muslims, I don't know if it ran through your mind when you were watching this or not, but it definitely ran through my mind. I mean, obviously there's a significant proportion of the Jewish population that has been fooled, duped, and led into a blind support for the Zionist, racist, expansionist policies of the government in Tel Aviv. To a certain extent, you can understand, any human being can understand that some Jews in the world are going to be supportive of Zionism. Not that it's justified or it's right, but simply because they have their own narrative of history that says that they didn't have a homeland since the time of the Israeli and the biblical prophets, and so now they want a homeland, and they got this territory, and you saw the way that they obtained this by force and by killing and murdering and assassinations and bloodshed and warfare and all of the nasty things that come with what went into the making of this nation state. But on the other hand, and this obviously the presentation did not go into this, but it certainly should have, I think, occurred to you as it occurred to me, that what are we, the Muslims, doing? Okay, the Jews are, well, many Jews are supporting Zionism. But how are we Muslims, and Zionism is not a just cause. It doesn't have any attraction to it if you step outside of the tribal and the ethnic and the racist mentality that makes up Zionism. So they are supporting their illegitimate nation state. But we have a legitimate cause. How are we supporting that? This is what what looks you in the eye, I guess, when you watch the scenes that we were all watching together. Something has to be done about this. We can't rely, I think, on discredited governments that have been torturing this issue in their own way for the past 62 or 63 years. They've simply proven to anyone willing to open their eyes and use their minds that they are part of the problem, not part of the solution. Now, with that, what do? You despair, you give up, you say, oh, I can't do anything. I don't think so. I don't think a person who is just an average human being, much less being a committed Muslim, could say, well, you know, this is meant to be and there's nothing we can do about it and we have to wait until the end of time until this is solved. I don't think you can. I mean, you know, what comes to mind is, yeah, you and I live the real world. We know that there are fanatics in this world. They come in different shapes and models. There are Christian fanatics, there are Muslim fanatics, and there's Jewish fanatics all over. And the easy way out, this may have not crossed your mind, but one of the thoughts that, you know, comes to your mind is, if you're thinking, is that, well, you know, this is a problem in which two opposite sides are torturing themselves, and this is not going to have a solution until Isa alayhi salam, or Jesus Christ in some people's language, comes to the world and solves this issue. And others who say this is not going to be solved until Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam is going to come to this world and solve this issue. But I don't think that this is the right way to think. You can't just sit down or step aside or take a neutral position and say that those who were complicit in the crucifixion are at war with those who were complicit in the shahada of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and that therefore both of them right now are paying the price for this type of history. That's an easy way out of it. And as I said, fanatics come in different colors and different forms and different modes. And some of this undisclosed fanaticism has this strong undercurrent to it. And I don't think the prophets or the imams, if they were alive and they were privy to something, watch, just like us sitting in the seat here and watching some of them. By the way, you know, much of this, as you may have realized, the comments and the statements that were made by these individuals, most of them were Jewish, anti-Zionist Jews. I don't know if you caught that. And then there were some, let's say, pro-Palestinian American officials who were making the intelligent comments about what was happening in Palestine. Of course, you saw that, you know, there were Palestinians and Jews who were on the ground there in the field where this misery is unfolding. But the ones who were speaking almost in a civilized manner about Israeli and Zionist policies were people who matured out of the Zionist shell and can now look at it in a more neutral and fair way and thus comment against the Zionist nation state. Unfortunately, we Muslims don't have... I also watched the names of the producers of this. There are some Muslim names, some Muslims who are involved in this, and I'm not trying to knock down their effort. But watching something like this and then realizing that there is no Islamic intelligent analysis or statements about what is happening there, that also in and of itself is a very serious flaw that hopefully in the coming years we will have, you know, a coming generation of Muslims who will have enough mental integrity and enough moral courage to say the truth, to speak truth to power, something that we've been lacking all along. Noam Chomsky, for example, I don't know if most, if you know this, but he was, I think, I can't remember, during the 1970s or 1960s, he used to go to Israel, and he used to be on the Moshav there, these agricultural settlements that were supported by many left-leaning individuals in the world. They'd go for a stint there, either a summertime or a full year, and help out with the tasks of having what they call the desert bloom. But obviously now he's making statements that contradict part of his actual effort a few decades ago. And then looking at all of this, we also realize that, I don't know if you ever thought about it this way, but the Zionist Israeli Jews, they make a big fuss about the fact that they endured a very steep price for their Jewishness in Europe. And they concentrate on the Holocaust in that regard. They say 6 million people perished, were killed during World War II by the Nazis and the Germans. And I'm not here to debate, you know, the Holocaust or speak for or against it. But you'd ask, let's assume for a moment that what they are saying is true. That's a big assumption. But let's assume that what they are saying true, 6 million Jews were killed during World War II in Europe. Now, World War II ended in 1945, and the Israeli nation state took root in 1947, 1948. So we're talking about 2 to 3 years after the terrible and horrible Holocaust took place, then you have, and I think you may have caught the number of Jews, there was a significant influx, movement of people, Jewish people from Europe to Palestine in the years of World War II and in the immediate years after that. Now, how can it fit in anyone's mind? I present this to you because obviously one individual is not the as much thought as that individual may have given this matter, is not the final arbiter of this issue. But I ask you, how can a population that endured and suffered and was tormented and almost virtually eliminated in Europe, how can it, in a matter of 2 or 3 years, do a Holocaust, begin to do a Holocaust in reverse? How can this happen? You come out of one of, described in the mainstream media as one of the worst experiences of the human race. Think about you yourself being in that condition. You lost family, they were emaciated, they show you the bodies, the skeleton images of Jewish people who were shipped on trains to concentration camps in Germany and in Poland and these areas. Okay, you see all of that, and you can, in yourself, you can internalize the misery of it all. Okay, you know that. How can you, having survived what your family members did not survive and your extended family members did not survive, how can you come to a land, say, this is my homeland now, and I'm going to do to the Palestinian people what was done to me in Europe? if the information we are getting is correct, and I have my question marks about it, but I'm setting those aside for a moment. But if the information we are getting is correct, we have one of two answers to this. Either to this meaning to how is it possible for hundreds of thousands of survivors of the Holocaust in Europe with the premium price that they paid with the loss of such a high number of people, 6 million, how could they, in a matter of just 2 or 3 years, launch into decades of a slow motion Holocaust against another population? The answer to that is one of two things, in my mind. You're free to contribute to this. Either that did not happen the way and with the numbers that they are presenting it. So if it didn't happen like that, it was just a few people who suffered in the Holocaust, then it did not touch all of those people who went and settled the way they did, stealing other people's lands and property, etc., etc. And therefore, they are free from the human agony that lives in you, that makes it impossible for you to do to others what others did to you, especially when these others, being the Palestinians, were not the Germans. So it places a big question mark on how that happened. That's one answer. The other answer, the figure stands. 6 million perished in the Holocaust. So how do we have this type of population doing these types of things to other people who are not involved in their torturous history in Europe? How can this be? The other answer to that is they would consider the victims, the Palestinians in this case, they would, whether they are Muslims, Christians, or whatever, they would consider them less than human beings. That's the only way you're going to rationalize this type of treatment. You saw the missiles, you saw the firebombs, you saw the explosions, you saw the bullets, you saw the blood, you saw all of this. How can a population do this type of thing to another population if it considers that population equally human? So one of the two answers are going to be an answer pertaining to the quantity, the 6 million, or to the quality of another non-Jewish human life. There's no other answer to it. But that's what we have. Now, on a more serious note, I think that we should take this this suffering of the Palestinian condition, and there are Christians and there are Muslims in this. The Jews who are anti-Zionists don't run into the type of problems and the type of dislocation and loss of life in there that the Muslims and the Christian Palestinians do. There are Jews who are opposed to Zionism. Some of them are secular Jews, and you saw some of them there. And some of them are religious Jews, and I noted one of them at least in this presentation, or two, who on the basis of Judaism are opposed to the type of atrocities that we were watching. But they don't fall into the same category as Muslims and Christians do when it comes to the Zionist policies in the occupied territories. Now, I've encountered individuals, I'm not saying that some of you are like this, but I've encountered individuals that they just don't want to be bothered with the Palestinian issue. I mean, they feel sorry and all of this, and just like an average human being. But if you tell them, well, don't you want to do something about this? They say, no, I don't want to, you know, I feel sorry and all, but, you know, I'm just not into doing anything about this. There's nothing much you can do with people like that. But if this issue, and this issue is becoming a global issue, it has nothing to do with a regional conflict, as some people, especially Zionist-controlled mainstream media, want to present it. It's an Arab-Israeli conflict. That's a misrepresentation of what it is. This is a conflict that is drawing in the whole world. The price of petroleum at the pump has to do with this conflict. The American economy right now is tied into this conflict. The invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, in one of its dimensions, has to do with this conflict. We have a shrinking world, and if people want to live in their own individualistic cocoons, well, they are free to do that. There's nothing much we... But if you are up to the events, you understand what is happening in this world, I think we don't have a choice. You know, something has to be done about this. And I think there is a vast area of American public opinion that has to be presented with the facts. This is a very good presentation. I don't know if the organizers of the conference have the wherewithal to duplicate this video. I know with the technology available, it shouldn't be a big deal. But if this can be duplicated, copies of it made, and given just at the expense of what it takes. I mean, it's not going to be that, I think, expensive to obtain something like this. And if we can take it back to wherever we come from, there are public libraries, you have your congressman's office, you have, some of you go to school and you have universities available to you. There are many ways that this can be presented to church groups, even to synagogues. You can go with this to some synagogues. Because one of the issues that is a central issue in Jewish congregations is fear. They are afraid of the other. They don't trust anyone, much less Palestinians or Muslims or whatever. So what if a person comes to them and says, what's all of this fear about? You know, look at what's happening and let's try to sort this thing out. If they accept that, well, you know, that's a first step, at least at one level. A lot of things have to be done. I can't be here, you know, trying to outline the many things that have to be done. But one of the things that has to be done is to try to have contact with especially some of these I know. Some of the individuals that you are listening to, I've spoken to, and we've had somewhat of a discussion about the Palestinian issue. But it's different when you speak to one individual than to speak to a congregation of individuals. So if this type of thing can be presented to the general Jewish public and say, okay, what is the fear all about? I mean, you fear the other because there has been a historical breach of trust between you and the other. Okay, let's deal with this. Let's see how far we can go in putting our hand on the sore issue or the sore points between us and you. And, you know, try to explain this to us. My experience is, and it may be an incomplete experience, but my experience is, out of maybe 10 attempts, 8 of them are going to fail. Okay, when you begin your effort, just put that in your mind, or let's make the math easier. 4 out of 5 attempts are going to fail. Put that in your mind, and don't let the failure get to you. Because we're, after all, human beings. And sometimes a person begins to count, well, I tried this 5 times, and 4 of them are a failure, and I'm just giving up on this. No, you can't work like that. If you know, Rachel Corrie, what you just heard her say, I mean, this is just a clear-minded and an unpolluted heart as far as, you know, seeing what happens there. And by the way, for those doubting Thomases and those, you know, reluctant and passive and indifferent and neutral individuals that you'll encounter here and there, you know, one of the statements that was made was that you really can't understand what is happening there unless you go there. And we are not, the majority of us, I think, we are not as poverty-stricken as to be unable to go there. So you may want to suggest for the people who have their emotions with the Palestinian issue, but their bodies and their physical energies outside of the Palestinian issue, you might want to tell them, okay, just give your emotions the benefit of the doubt and go and see what's happening there, like one of the speakers said on in this presentation, for 1 week. Just go to Gaza or the West Bank for 1 week and see for yourselves, for in the case of one person, see for yourself what is happening there. That's the biggest lesson. None of this will penetrate the indifference and the non-involvement of people. Nothing is going to match just being there and seeing things with your own eyes. And if you're scared, and some of us are scared, I know, if you're scared to go there, to Gaza or the West Bank, go to Lebanon and get a sense of the real world. And that's one area, as I said, there's no considerable Islamic contribution to this presentation. But if there were, definitely there would have been comments about the Islamic resistance in Lebanon and about Hezbollah and the way they are treating this whole issue. I think it's about time that the Muslims catch up with the momentum of the Islamic resistance and the Islamic military answer to the Zionist occupation of Palestine. And it seems like this is the only thing that is going to bring us any results. And you, I think, know firsthand that because the Islamic State in Iran is the only state in the world that is serious about the Palestinian issue, that is why it is in the position that it is in nowadays. It only takes one thing out of all of the policies of the Islamic State to normalize its relations with the type of powers right now that are taking issue with it. And that one issue is the one that you were just looking at. Step back from that, and you will see people want prosperity and they want all of this other stuff. That's the only thing it takes. And you have the choice. Either you are true to your convictions, which you've been seeing in live presentation, or you want to have the benefits of both worlds, so to speak. You want to be theoretical Muslims, but you resist being the necessary revolt that comes from that theory to practice it indeed. We all have, and I'm going to end with this note, I took a little more than my time. I'm going to end with this note. We have Yom al-Quds, the International Day of al-Quds, during the last Friday in the month of Ramadan. This year, the month of Ramadan, this coming year, the month of Ramadan is going to almost coincide with the full month of August. I haven't looked at the calendar yet, but it probably the last Friday in the week of August. It makes it a little easier for you to imagine this on your calendar. That Friday is designated as the day of Al-Quds. It would be very appropriate here to, even though we still have maybe 8 months or so to arrive to that day, but this needs preparation, and you might want to think about coordinating. Some of you come from different states, from different regions of the country, about coordinating a protest movement that will be much more significant than the previous ones in the cities that they are held in. You know, there's different cities in the country, and there could be more involvement. You can go to others who are not Muslims. And there are free souls and non-polluted minds out there that want justice as much as you and I want justice. And I think there has to be an outreach to these types of groups. Maybe something can be, you can begin something here. There should have been maybe one table there outside that is designated for Yawm al-Quds and for those individuals who can set aside just a few hours a month. It's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. Just a few hours a month to try to get other justice-centered people involved in expressing their opposition to U.S. policy the way it's strangled by the Israeli Zionist nation state. Free it from that strangulation and have it see the light of day and become a nation that doesn't support occupation, an occupation that kills. Thank you for your patience with me this evening.